Indra Uvacha. Indra said, Aho. Hello. Danava.
Danava.
Oh, demon. Sita Asi.
Sita Asi.
You are now perfect.
You are now perfect.
Yasya.
Yasya.
Whose?
Te.
Your.
Matahi.
Consciousness. Idrishi. Such as this. Bhaktaha. A great devotee. Sarvatmana.
Sarvatmana.
Without diversion.
Without diversion.
Diversion, that's a big word for all of you. That means without looking at anything else other than serving Krishna. You understand? Diversion. A diversion like on the road would be like if they're doing construction on the road, they'll divert you to another road. Anyway, so that's a diversion. Only Krishna consciousness. Atmanam.
Atmanam.
To the super soul.
To the super soul.
Suridam.
Suridam.
The greatest friends.
Jagat Ishvaram.
To the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, translation, Indra said, O great demon, I see by your discrimination and endurance in devotional service, despite your dangerous position, that you are a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul and friend of everyone. So you can repeat, Indra said,
Indra said,
O great demon,
O great demon,
I see by your determination,
I see by your determination,
and
endurance,
in
devotional service,
despite
your dangerous position, that you are a perfect devotee,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul and friend of everyone. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
As stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, text 22, Yam lavva chaparam labham manyate narikam tataka yasmin stito na dukena guruna pi vichalyate. Established in Krishna consciousness, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. An unalloyed devotee is never disturbed by any kind of trying circumstance. Indra was surprised to see that Vritrasura, undisturbed, was fixed in devotional service to the Lord. For such mentality is impossible for a demon. However, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, anyone can become an exalted devotee. Striyo vaishyastatha shudrastepi yanti param gatim. An unalloyed devotee is sure to return home back to Godhead. So, Indruvachaho danavasirosi. Yashyate matir he drishi bhakta sarvatmanatvanam suridam jagat ishvaram. So Om Ganatim Danda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurin Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So you find it very interesting here that Indra is defining or describing this demon, Vritrasura, as a great devotee, based not upon the ecstatic symptoms that someone is exhibiting, but simply upon his symptoms of what we call nishta. It's interesting. It's very interesting. Because generally we look at someone and think someone's a great devotee because they exhibit certain symptoms of ecstasy. Like if you go to a performance of the Bhagavat Saptaha, I'm calling it a performance right now. I'm deliberately using that word. the person doing the Bhagavad Saptaha will be very dramatic. You ever been to a Bhagavad Saptaha? I have. I've seen them in India. Very dramatic. Oh, Govinda. And all the ladies in front, they have to put the ladies in front, go, oh, Govinda. And then he breaks out in song like that. It's like almost like a Bollywood movie, but not quite. Because no one's dancing. But it's very dramatic, and everyone's thinking, wow, he's a great devotee. And even in the Christian religion, you have these preachers who are just like very dynamic. You have, sometimes they come here to Fiji, and they're just like, we call them hellfire and brimstone. That means they have the fire, hell. Hellfire and brimstone means that they talk about going to hell. And they threaten people. If you don't accept the Lord Jesus, you have to die in the blood. In the blood. You ever hear that? They talk about the blood, and I just say, oh my God, the blood. Maybe they should go to a hospital. And you have to surrender. You're going to hell, the hell of the brimstone. And everyone's thinking, what a great devotee that person is, or great preacher, whatever. So we have these different methods of analyzing things in terms of thinking who is a great devotee, or who is a great Christian, or who is a great personality, simply based on something called either charisma or some bodily symptoms, right? Because this is Shudra. A Shudra doesn't analyze qualities. A Shudra doesn't analyze, but a Shudra just basically sees what appeals to the senses. So, I'll tell you a very interesting story from the Chaitanya Bhagavat that illustrates this point. How a Brahmin was actually a Shudra, and someone born in a Brahmin family in a Shudra family, or less than Shudra family, was actually the greatest of the Brahmins. So, here's a story. Chaitanya Bhagavat. Once upon a time, there was this person, he was a snake dancer. You know, in India you have these things like snake dance, they dance like a snake or whatever like that. And so anyway, so he was a great devotee. And he was dancing the snake dance. You know, you've heard that before. And he was sound familiar? Yeah. Anyway, so he was dancing this snake dance, and he was doing the snake dance in glorification of Krishna dancing on the head of Kaliya. You know, he's a devotee. And he was surrounded by a large group of villagers. They were watching him. Wow. He's pretty amazing. And then along comes Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur sees the snake dance. And Haridas Thakur starts dancing. He falls on the ground in ecstasy and exhibits the symptoms of ecstasy. And all the villagers surround him. And even the snake dancer stops dancing. He just watches Haridas Thakur, understanding that Haridas Thakur is a great devotee and appreciating the symptoms of ecstasy. All right. So then there was one Brahmin who was watching the whole thing, Mr. Sharma. He was watching the whole thing. No one that you know, because this was 500 years ago, obviously. So he was watching the whole thing, and he thought, wow, this Haridas Thakur has gotten such prophet adoration distinction. He's being appreciated. Everyone's watching him. All I have to do is imitate, and everyone will love me too. So as soon as Haridas Thakur came back to external consciousness, and the snake dancer started to dance again, then what happened is that this Brahmin, he went into the middle and started exhibiting these symptoms of ecstasy too. But at this particular point, the snake dancer, in spite of being of the lower caste, because obviously that's what happens with, you know, with people, dancers, musicians like that, he took his staff and started beating the Brahmin right in front of everybody. Like that. And everyone was amazed, and this Brahmin finally, you know, just basically with a torn dhoti and, you know, crying, he just ran away. And so the crowd asked the snake charmer and snake dancer, why did you do such a thing? And he said, look, he's just imitating this great devotee, Haridas Thakur. He was just like a pretender. So here he was beating the Brahmin. It's interesting. So then the question arises, how did he know Haridas Thakur was a great devotee of the Lord? It wasn't by the symptoms of ecstasy. It wasn't by some mystic powers. Because there's so many magicians who can do mystical things. It was by Haridas Thakur's, as mentioned here, determination, endurance, discrimination. Like we find in the Upadeshamrita. Utsahan nisjet daryat. Tatat karma pravartana. Right? Sangos jagat sato vritte sadvir bhakti prasidyate. You all know this verse? You should learn it. Very important verse. These are the qualities that really display one's advancement in devotional service. There are other qualities too, such as vacho vegam. But in this particular verse, it states that utsaha means enthusiasm. And enthusiasm means in each and every circumstance, no matter what, one remains enthusiastic. In other words, no depression, no crying, lamentation, like we find in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahmabhuta prasanatma nasochati nakankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. Right? One who is transcendentally situated, he doesn't lament or hanker for anything. So that's utsaha. He's always enthusiastic. And you see that with Prabhupada also. When Prabhupada was getting ready to leave this world, and basically his body was just skin and bones. And he never became depressed. He was very enthusiastic too. He was dictating the Srimad Bhagavatam up until the final end. You can see videos of that. He couldn't even hold the microphone there. Someone else had to hold the microphone, and Prabhupada, basically his eyes were closed and he was lying in his bed. And he was dictating Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, these are symptoms of a great devotee. So utsaha nishya darya. And determined and, enthusiastic, determined, faith, all these different... Oh my God. See? I'm not too transcendental. Exploding balloon. So, these are the qualities that one must look for. So Haridas Thakur, getting back to the story, certainly exhibited those qualities. He was faithfully chanting 3 lakhs of names a day. That's 300,000 names, or 192 rounds a day he was chanting. And his great determination was shown even when he was approached by Mayadevi, the material energy personified, who attempted to lure him from his dedication to chanting, and he simply continued chanting. So really, that's the point. That's how we can ascertain if someone's a great devotee of the Lord. I mean, it's not a very difficult thing to ascertain. It's called nishta. Just like we have in the process of devotional service, there's different levels. There's ado shraddha tatha saru sangota vajana kriya. That's the beginning. In the beginning, one has a little faith, and then saru sangha, one begins to associate with the devotees. One begins to follow the rules and regulations. And even in that stage, one may exhibit symptoms of ecstasy. Because Rupa Goswami describes in the Bhakti Rasam Rita Sindhu that even a materialist, when he's in the proper association of devotees, can actually feel ecstasy. He calls it dried up or burnt up ecstasy. That even a materialist, I've seen that. Sometimes when we're doing festivals, One time we were doing a festival in one city in the United States, a Chaitanya festival for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. And the devotees were chanting very, very enthusiastically. And this man, I was distributing books, another wonderful activity. So I was distributing books, and this man walks by, and he says, "Why? I'm feeling so much happiness." Just some man, ordinary, you know, American man. He said, "I'm experiencing so much happiness. What are you burning?" We were burning incense, of course, but he thought we were burning something else, marijuana. And he was just breathing it, and somehow or other feeling it. So I said, "No, it's the holy names." And he was feeling, just by walking into the atmosphere or the environment where the holy names were being chanted. So experiencing ecstasy is not a symptom of that you're a pure devotee. Because we all experience, I mean, most of us experienced ecstasy when we first walked into the Hare Krishna temple. But as we continued to commit offenses against Vaishnavas, our ecstasy went down. That's why people always ask me the question, "When I joined the movement, I was much happier. Why am I miserable now? Why am I not getting a taste for chanting?" Well, because you've been engaged in the national sport in Fiji, politics. You think the national sport is rugby? No, you are wrong. The national sport is politics. Politics means being two-faced. You know, two-faced? Like it's interesting, Mother Sachi, it's an interesting story because Mother Sachi accused the Dvaitacharya of being Dvaita instead of Advaita. She said, "You are Dvaita. You are not Advaita. You're two-faced because you convinced my son Visvarupa to take sannyas." You know, she was very upset. I mean, obviously your son disappears in the middle of the night. You're going to be pretty angry, right? And so she committed that offense against Advaitacharya. And then when it came time for Lord Chaitanya to give love of God to everyone, he refused to give love of God to Mother Sachi because she had committed that offense. Even, in other words, how serious are offenses that even the Lord's mother couldn't get love of God because she had offended a devotee? See, that's pretty serious, isn't it? Very, very serious. Offending devotees. And then, of course, there's even a story from the Ramayana where you have these two gorillas, Dvidvita and Mainda, who were great devotees. They were assisting Lord Ram. But then they commit an offense against the Vaishnavas. Anyone remember who they committed an offense against? Anyone know Ramayana? You're all supposed to be Ram Bhaktas here. No. Terrible. So they committed an offense against Lakshman, who is Lord Ram's devotee. He is also expansion of God. And as a result of that, they became so demoniac that later on they were challenging Balaram as he was dancing his dance on the Raivata mountains. And Balaram had to kill him. Pretty interesting, isn't it? That, you know, if you commit it. So anyway, getting back to our national sport here in Fiji, that we have this whole tendency to talk behind other people's backs, right? And criticize Vaishnavas. This is actually quite offensive. I mean, sometimes we can correct devotees. As they say, even in the Christian world, they say, "Hate the sin, not the sinner." But we've turned that around. We say, "Hate the sinner, not the sin." Isn't it? We have this attitude of hating people. I mean, politics means friends and enemies, doesn't it? And actually, that's what Pallad Maharaj rejected when Sanda Namarkar, the sons of Shukracharya, were attempting to teach him politics. They were trying to teach him how to deal with friends and how to deal with enemies. So we see like that. You know, we hate certain people, we like other people. It's nonsense. And we talk behind other people's backs. And then we wonder why we don't have any taste for hearing and chanting. We wonder why we can't get up early in the morning anymore. We wonder why we don't like to be with devotees anymore. That happens. That's actually what Krishna does. If you commit enough offenses, he'll make you have a distaste for being with devotees. So you won't offend them anymore. I mean, that protects the devotees. I mean, if you're an offender, Krishna will just put you somewhere else that you don't like to associate with the devotees. So therefore, it's very important, and this is an important message for all of you from Fiji. I think most of you are from Fiji, or live in Fiji. Is that don't talk about other people behind their backs. If you have something to say, you could say it to them in a nice way, some correction or something like that, in a nice way. But we don't want to criticize Vaishnavas. That's the mad elephant offense. You lose a taste for hearing and chanting completely. So anyway, so that's why right now we don't have so much of a taste for hearing and chanting like we did when we first joined the Hare Krishna movement. So, those shraddhata sadhu sangota bhajanakriya. So, anyway, so the different stages of devotional service, beginning with faith, association with devotees, bhajanakriya, and then anartha nivritti, getting rid of the anarthas. And after anartha nivritti, you get nishta. In other words, to be steady in devotional service, you have to be free, relatively free, from anarthas. Like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, etc. So this is how you can judge whether someone is advanced in devotional service. You really can't judge whether they're a Mahabhagwat or not. Unless someone like Prabhupada, who spreads Krishna consciousness all over the world, that's obvious, he's a Mahabhagwat. So we should be discriminating also, not to criticize devotees, but discriminating insofar as who we associate with. And particularly, we should desire to associate with those who are steady and devoid of the propensity to criticize others. You'll find this a common denominator amongst the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They did not want to criticize others. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was confronted by this horrible critic named Ramchandra Puri, who had criticized Lord Chaitanya for eating too much, and saying that Lord Chaitanya kept sweets in his room, and he didn't criticize him in return. I mean, that's how strict Lord Chaitanya was with criticizing others. He didn't criticize others. And even Srila Prabhupada said if we would speak against some particular philosophy, he said it's better not to mention the person's name. Otherwise, it's like touching a skunk. You start smelling too. You just mention the philosophy. So we have to be very careful not to engage in personal criticism of anyone. Very, very important point. Anyway, so here Indra is appreciating these basic qualities of Vritrasura. That Vritrasura, also another point here, is that Vritrasura was very determined to carry out service to the Lord, even though his service was not pleasant. I mean, what would you, if Krishna said to you, you're supposed to be a demon, that's your service? Would you say, you know, Krishna, I'd like another service? Or when the spiritual master tells a disciple, gives his disciple a service, the disciple says, I'd like to have a second opinion. I'd like to go to my Siksha Guru and get a second opinion. But this is the point. Whatever service we've been given. So the way you can tell in ISKCON, this is really the point, whether someone is advanced is whether they are dedicating themselves to Srila Prabhupada's mission, working for the Krishna consciousness movement, putting aside their own interests, because that satisfies Krishna. Like, how do we know what satisfies Krishna? Srila Prabhupada has very nicely told us what satisfies Krishna. Cooperation, love and trust, spreading the movement, dedication to his mission. That's what satisfies Krishna. And that's how we can judge whether someone is advanced. If they're dedicated and without deviation, as mentioned here, endurance, that means they're advanced. Just like my godbrother, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. It's very interesting. He went into a dangerous position. What was his dangerous position? He was preaching in the previous Soviet Union before it broke up. And he was living basically on a train trying to avoid the KGB, which is the Secret Service, you know, whatever. Because you haven't experienced it here. I mean, you think you have a military government, which is a very nice government. But there in Russia, you were taken sometimes by the secret police and you disappeared. You were never seen again. And nobody knew where you were. Or you were sent to this place called Siberia. I know in near Lombasa you have a Siberia also, right? Isn't that right? But this Siberia is in all the way in the coldest place practically in the world, and you're put into a gulag, which is a camp where you practically have no facility and you have to work in the snow most of the day. So that's how dangerous Russia was. But he was distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, knowing that that can happen, having to jump from one train to another in the middle of the night while the secret police were following him, just to carry out Prabhupada's order. It's amazing, isn't it? Just to carry out Prabhupada's order, he was risking his life. And Prabhupada did something that he didn't do ordinarily with devotees, like Prabhupada gave him a gigantic hug when he came to see Prabhupada. And Prabhupada talked about how wonderful he was. Prabhupada didn't generally do that. He didn't talk about how wonderful devotees were because they would become very prideful. Generally Prabhupada said, my business is to chastise disciples. One time there was one devotee, Surabhi Maharaj, who had helped build the temple in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada came, the first thing he arrived in Vrindavan, he started basically just like chastising, criticizing Surabhi Maharaj. And then he said to the devotees, that's my business, to chastise. And of course you also see that with Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He was very, the devotees told me last night, even when he arrived for his greeting speech, it was heavy. Everyone would be shaking. So that's the business of the spiritual master. I still have to learn that, but I have to go to chastising school to learn how to get angry. So anyway, so the test of a devotee is how strictly he follows the order of the guru, and in Krishna consciousness and our movement, that means how strictly one follows the order of the divine grace of the Prabhupada, and that's how you ascertain whether someone is an advanced devotee. Okay? So that's what I'd like to speak about this morning. Any questions about anything I said? In other words, basic standard of judgment. Yeah. Unalloyed devotional service. Okay, that's an easy question. So, in what's called metallurgy, that's a fancy word. That means when you're dealing with different metals, there's different alloys. This is actually where the word comes from. An alloy means a mixture. Let's say if you have 24 karat gold, that's pure gold. I think most of you know about gold. Where's our gold merchant? Oh, there he is. You can ask him about these things later on. So 24 karat is pure gold. 18 karat is not so pure, right? What do they mix it with? What? No, but what do they mix 18 karat with? They put some other metal in it. Silver? Sometimes cheaper metals they put into it. Actually, Vrindavan is more expensive. Copper. Yeah, if they put silver, that's a little more expensive, but copper. And then you have 10 karat gold too? What's the lowest you can get? 9 karat. No, actually even lower is just gold plated. Right? It's like sometimes you buy these things from India, like they talk about silver, for example. You buy this nice silver plate and think, oh, how wonderful it is for the deities. And then 3 weeks later, it starts to turn brown. You ever had that experience? And it was just a little tiny coat of silver, like $1 worth of silver. And they sold it to you for $200. And you were cheated. So it's just a coating, or what we call veneer. So an alloy means to mix some other thing with the original. This is an alloy of silver. In other words, they'll even put things into silver, won't they? Sometimes there's pure silver, and sometimes there's mixed silver. So devotional service, pure devotional service means anyabhi lashita shunyam jnana karma anavritam. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. There's nothing else other than service to Krishna. Love of Krishna. It's not mixed. Just like we have Karma Mishra Bhakti is an alloy of pure devotional service. What does Karma Mishra Bhakti mean? That means bhakti mixed with a desire for some personal gain. Example of that is Dhruva Maharaj in the beginning. He was executing Karma Mishra Bhakti. You understand? Not at the end. At the end he was pure devotee. But in the beginning he wanted something. He wanted a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. That's Karma Mishra Bhakti. And then you also find Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Jnana Mishra Bhakti means you mix bhakti with a desire to get liberated. Or even some impersonalism sometimes. You know, someone's worshiping God with the idea of merging into him. Or someone's worshiping God with the idea of getting out of the material world. I give this example sometimes that when I was a new devotee, I would chant and ask Krishna to kill me and take me back to Godhead. Because I was so miserable living in the Brahmachari ashram. No, the Brahmacharis were nice, but it was real austerity living in the Brahmachari ashram because everybody would share the same clothes. You couldn't sleep at night because everybody was snoring. There were about like 30 men in the same room. So I said, Krishna, kill me. Take me back to Godhead. He didn't do it. So that's Jnana Mishra Bhakti. And then there's Shuddha Bhakti. Shuddha Bhakti. Which means you simply desire, as we're chanting every morning, Asli Shiva Pada Panashtu Mama Darshana Mamratam Guru Tuva Yata Tata Vavadadatu Lampato Mat Prananatas. To save an aparad, right? That Krishna, you can do anything. You can crush me by your embrace. You can leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You're free to do anything you want and you'll remain my worshipful Lord unconditionally. Also, that's very similar to the statement of Lord Brahma, Tattenu kampam sushamikshamana vunjanibatma kritam vipakam ridbhav vipurvir. Vidadam namaste jivete yo mukti pade sadayava. That a devotee will go on serving with his body, mind, and words regardless of the difficult circumstance. He actually even thinks the difficult circumstance is due to his bad karma. You know, he takes the blame for bad things and he gives Krishna the blame. It gives credit for good things. But if you're not a good devotee, you'll blame Krishna for the bad things. And then you'll take credit for the good things. Like say if you do something nice for Krishna, you cook nicely for Krishna, instead of saying it's Krishna's mercy, you say, you know, I did a good job. Or if something bad happens, let's say you get an accident, you say, it's Krishna's fault. So we should be the opposite. We should say that if we're suffering, that's due to the past sinful reactions or things I did before, And if something good happens, Krishna is blessing me. Of course, ultimately it's Krishna. So unalloyed devotional service means without any mixture of anything else, like 24 karat gold. That's unalloyed devotional service. And we may not be in that platform right now, but we should aspire for that platform. That's right. Prabhupada said if you have the least bit material desire, you can't go back to Godhead. Even any desire you have, even if you want to satisfy the tongue, even if you want to say goodbye to your family before you go back to Godhead, you can't go back. I mean, even in the Bible, you have Jesus Christ asking someone to follow him. And he says, well, first I got to bury my father. And Jesus Christ says, let the dead bury the dead. You know, very heavy stuff, you know, there. So, but that's the point. You can't have 1 ounce, 1 gram of anything else, any other desire other than please the senses of Krishna. And serve Krishna. Then you don't go back to Godhead. But that's all right. At least you take birth in a devotee family in the next life. Like we have so many nice children who are coming into devotional service and they were devotees in their last lives. Sometimes you recognize them. Hey, you were that brahmachari in the ashram with me before. Good to see you again, Prabhu. It's true. Prabhupada said first of all, the demigods are standing in line to take birth in the Krishna consciousness movement, and also people take birth because they're great devotees. They want to finish up their Krishna consciousness, or they come for a mission to preach Krishna consciousness. So, you have a question?
In material knowledge, we learn that when a child is born, go to kindergarten, then go to primary school, then go to high school.
Yes.
College, then university, then the final job. In spiritual life, what are the things we need to do, educate ourselves so that we can come to the higher stage?
Well, we need to educate ourselves in the process of bhakti. Now, sadhana, vaidhi bhakti, that's nectar devotion. Like Prabhupada said, nectar devotion is our law book. But we also need to educate ourselves in the material energy, which is interesting. Not that we have to become technologists or anything like that, unless that happens to be our field of activities. But we have to be aware of the actions of Maya, how Maya works. That's why Bhagavad Gita has chapters. We were talking about this the other day in class. There's a chapter about the three modes of material nature. There's a whole chapter. And then also in the 17th chapter, there's a lot of stuff about the three modes of nature. And in the 18th chapter, there's a lot of things about the three modes of nature. So why? It's just about Maya, right? So you have to be able to identify Maya to get out of Maya. If you don't know what Maya looks like, feels like, smells like, then how are you going to get out of it? Right? So it's the Isopanishad says, vidya avidya. One has to cultivate even avidya, knowledge of the material world, in order to get out of the material world. So you can't be just like naive. It's like that Rishi Sringa. You know Rishi Sringa? That's a story from the Ramayana. He was very naive. He had never seen a lady his whole life. Because his father, the Rishi Kumbhanda, he didn't like ladies. He was a chauvinist. Anyway, we're not going to tell the whole story. It's almost time to greet. But so then when some prostitutes came, he thought they were the greatest devotees of the Lord. They came, and anyway, I tell the story many times. They were acting like brahmanas, and he said, please accept my obeisances. And they said, in our country, we don't offer obeisances, we just hug. So, when he hugged them, he experienced romancha. You know, the hair stood on it. And he thought, this is better than offering dandavats. So, because he didn't understand what Maya was. And therefore people are so stupid nowadays because they don't understand what illusion is and what spirituality is they accept so many stupid things as spiritual. You know, if some lady says that she's a guru and she goes around hugging people, they think it's the most ecstatic spiritual experience they've ever had. Can you imagine that? Maybe some of you ladies should do that as a business. You make a lot of money. See the hugging, yeah, we can advertise. The hugging lady. You get hugged by her and you become Krishna conscious, you know, whatever. People are so stupid, if you give something a name, they actually believe the name. That's a symptom of Kali Yuga, is that people will be understood simply by the external dress and name that they're given. I gave that example yesterday, that I had one disciple who's a very good yogi. His name is Gokul. Remember the example I gave? But he wasn't getting so many customers. Actually, he knows more postures than anybody I've ever met. I mean, he has thousands of postures and he practices them all every day. Amazing, amazing person. He does postures that are impossible. You know, such a great yogi. You can see him on Facebook. So anyway, so he wasn't getting so many customers. So I said, all right, let's change your name then. Let's put in front of your name, we'll call you Mahayogi. Go cool. And he said, really? Why should we do that, Gurudev? I said, just watch. And so we changed his name to Mahayogi. And I said, when you're going anywhere, you should advertise, the Mahayogi is coming, just like banners all over the city. And now he's become much more popular. Just because we changed the name. I mean, he's a good yogi, too. So it's like people are so foolish, you give someone a name, and they think the person has become the name. You know, if I wanted to be a popular guru, they could just give me a first name, Bhagawan Birkrishnamar, you know, anyway. And you go around and say, he's God, he's God, he's God. Everyone is going to say, wow, God has come to Fiji. People are so foolish at Kali Yuga, isn't it? You can, as long as you have a good advertising agency, you can sell people any damn product. And just like even the soap that you buy, they advertise new, improved, whiter than white, better than better. It's just stupid soap. It's the same soap you've been using for the last 50 years. But you put it in a new package and you think it's wonderful. So we shouldn't be foolish like that. We have to see things by qualities. That's the whole point of today's class. Okay. Time to greet the deities. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai.